ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 39 of Beyond Retro. We're proud to say that the Rotten Amato, Jojo Amato, is back with us this week.
I'm here.
As enthusiastic as ever.
Getting there. Yeah, last week had things that, like I said, around Father's Day, but all good now. All getting recovered, so I'm all set.
And Joe's got cold water, so we know he's good in that department there, too. So he'll stay.
No breaking. Yeah.
Yeah.
No
I don't want to say hydrated because Lewis Black hates the word hydrate, and so do I. And Nasty Nate is here with us, too.
As always.
So it is summertime, and I've been dying to talk about the quintessential summer movie. It's a movie for all seasons, but
if you were to guess, just look behind Tyler because he's got a poster for everything.
I do. I won't have a poster for every movie we talk about or a reference to every TV show we talk about, but I do have a lot. And I've had this Point Break poster since mid, early 2000s, I think, when you could get posters on eBay relatively cheap. Original posters on eBay pretty cheap still. So, yes, I'm a proud owner of original Point Break movie poster, which is what we're here to talk about, which is I think, up there with Michael Mann's Heat, the greatest crime action drama of all time.
I think watching it last night again, I hadn't seen it in a while. Those, just the way that Catherine Bigelow filmed, how they planned all that out, it incredible. Lots of tension built up, especially, and we'll get to some of those scenes and talk about them, but the tension is it's perfect.
It is perfection. It is. Joe Amato, we have that seal of approval, the Italian finger kiss.
Yeah, this will, it'll be interesting because I can't wait to at least hear more of what you both have to say, because I know you both are bigger fans, and it's not that I don't like the movie, it's just that it's a movie I've seen twice, and the reason being is I've seen, I remember Patrick Swayze in Outsiders, which I liked, and I liked him in Red Dawn, and then came Dirty Dancing. And that's just, I'm not saying if people love that movie, that's great.
I hate that movie. I hate Dirty Dancing. It sucks.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. I seen him in that movie. I don't like these kind of movies. Like, oh, man, I like them in action movies or something where there's fighting or something. So when Dirty Dancing came out, I was like, crap. And then Roadhouse came out. I was like, okay, good. Roadhouse is good. He's back to fighting. Then came Ghost. And when Ghost came, I was like, damn it, again.
I had to watch Ghost so many times because my mom, God, when it came out to own on VHS, we bought it, I want to say, that weekend. And that was the only TV we had in the house, too. So I just basically, it was either go outside and sweat my ass off.
Or watch Ghost.
God, she had the soundtrack, and I had to like hear that playing all the time. So yeah, I don't like Ghost. I don't like Dirty.
I got a lot of panties wet when it came out because Swayze was People Magazine's sexiest man alive. I think probably around that time frame. Yeah. Ghost was a giant hit with women.
They were just like, I want him to wrap his arms around me while we're making pottery. And
I know, and that shit was just, it's not my cup of tea. So
it's
like
not
said, Dirty
Dancing. I appreciate a good love story, but not that kind of. I mean, the Ghost. When I watch it, it's not a bad movie. It really isn't. But it's not my thing. I don't own the movie. I don't want to own it, but. If, a lady wants to watch Ghost, sure, I got no problem with that. Sure. I prefer Demi Moore with long hair than that short boy haircut. But and Whoopi Goldberg was good in it. But yeah, I'm like with Joe. It's not something it's not a film that I would sit here in my apartment
and revisit.
And say, I'm in the mood to watch Ghost.
That's what I mean. It's not the movie. Just, at least me and you and Nathan, I don't want to
I wish you'd have said this before because I completely sympathize because, you guys know I hate Mark Wahlberg. I hate Will Ferrell. I hate Chris Pratt. If they're in a movie, I don't care what people say. It tarnishes any idea or any thought that I would want to see it because of a particular actor. So I can understand why Joe is put off by Swayze's, turn into the romantic male lead. Like when Gerald Butler did 300, I thought, oh, man, we got a new action here we could probably get behind. And then he makes all these lineups of just god-awful, bad, shitty romantic movies, and I lost all respect for him. And oddly enough, to bring it back to Point Break, he was supposed to be Bodie and was Bodie, and then he quit, which I was actually like, I'm like, you know what? Gerald Butler looks kind of cool as a new Bodie. I'm like, all right. And then he quit. I'm like, you know what? It's probably for the best that he quit, because it's probably not a good idea they remake it. They did, and everyone forgot it, and I'm glad it bombed and will never get, you know, acknowledged ever again.
No, definitely. But, yeah, so, like I said, Dirty Dancing, but then there was Redemption with Roadhouse, and then Ghost came, and then I was just pissed. I was like, oh, damn it. I was like, I don't care what movie comes out. I was like, I just don't want to watch it. And then Point Break, of course, came out, I think, after Ghost. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, but, it did, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, here's Point Break. And I was like, okay, well, at least it was kind of good. But I was just, I kind of just got pissed at him with those. It's terrible. It's like, why would you be pissed? But I was. So I watched the movie twice in my whole life. But it is a good movie. But just my anger for Patrick Swayze and his other movies kept me from probably revisiting it and enjoying it much more.
Well, no, and I like Joe's logic behind that, because that's how I feel about today's action hero male leads, is that they're not as macho anymore as they used to be. Now, granted, you know, Swayze did his kind of bounce between romantic male leads and action hero leads, and he did, you know, of course, I hate Dirty Dance with a passion. I think that's probably the one film I don't ever want to watch is that movie, you know, with him in it.
And the cool one cool thing, at least, is that we live close by to the filming locations of Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, and I've been there, because I've multiple, not to just so I could take the tour. But yeah. I've just been there to Mount Lake multiple times where the filming took place. They've got a shop set up with merchandise and stuff, and they give tours all the time.
And I mean, what about Bob was filmed there too? So
I thought that was at Smith Mountain Lake.
Oh, maybe it was. My bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm getting all of them mixed up now. That was filmed not far
from us too, Joe. but with Point Break, to me, it was a film that was very impressionable to me as a kid, because the trailer for Point Break, I'd say, is probably one of the top three greatest trailers that's ever been done. It's a trailer that was so energizing to this day. I can watch it and just get pumped. I'm like, oh man, it's summertime. You got to go to the beach and we got to fight crime and do some surfing, which in my case means boogie boarding, because I sure as hell can't surf, you know. But it's such an exciting trailer. And I remember when I saw the trailer, I thought Keanu and Patrick were going to team up to take down the ex-presidents, because at least back then, you know, not all trailers spoiled movies. And that was a trailer that, to me, didn't paint the picture that Patrick was going to be the bad guy. It's presented as if, like, they befriend each other. You see Patrick suiting up, putting on a bulletproof vest. You know that Keanu's a cop. So it made me think that they were cops, and they're going to team up and take down the ex-president. So when I saw it, it threw me for a loop, in a good way, though. But it was and I remember wanting to see it so badly, but as a child, it was a rated R film. It was an adult film, so I could only see a few of those. And it was attached to Predator 2, the trailer for that was. And we'd rent Predator 2. I'd see the trailer a lot. I'd see the trailer on TV, and it just looked so cool. The trailer, the music in the trailer, the action in the trailer, it just seemed like such a, you know, oh my God, this is action, thriller, crime at absolute perfection. It really is. It's a flawless film. It's a film that just gets better and better and better and better. Doesn't age poorly. I mean, all the acting's great. The storyline's great. And hell, I remember when I saw Fast and the Furious, like the one time I thought, after I saw it, I'm like, that's Point Break. This whole movie's Point Break. You know, and they've made this ridiculously bad franchise. Sorry, Nathan. Stealing from Point Break. And
wait, hold on a second. Wait. Why did you say sorry, Nathan? But then Nathan said, I don't give a shit. Do you really?
I think he just, for some reason, he thinks that it's going to be like a good dig. Like, I love the Fast and Furious. No.
I will, let me make it clear. Nathan is not a hardcore fanatic of Fast and the Furious films. He does think they're all right.
Once you get from part five on, I enjoy everything kind of before it, not so much.
It was like we were having like a confessional. Like, I was Nathan's priest, and he's like, Father, forgive me, for I have sinned, you know.
Oh no, I when he used to come over to my place, and I had I think at the time I had Fast Five and the sixth one, I would take them out of my collection and hide them, just so when he came over he wouldn't look and be like, what is this shit?
It's something even funnier, because, I mean, now I have to ask you, here's our quick little side rant. I've never seen a single one of any of those movies.
And God, so I envy you so much.
Yeah, never watch any. So now I'm curious, though, what made part five become good to you? And what was, I've never heard that. Usually in a series, you hear somebody say, you know, I like part one and two, but when it got past those, it fell to shit. But you're saying 1, 2, 3, 4 was shit, and then you like 5 and 6 and
all right. So Here's what separates it. Those first couple films, it was all about the street racing and, you know, the petty theft and all that. And the main focus was just the street racing and cars. Once you get to part five, that's when it turns more into like, we're going to do a bank heist. We're going to do this and this. It's moved more towards the action heist film in a similar vein to A Point Break, etc.
I just assumed they were all racing movies. You're not saying they're not all racing.
No, no. The emphasis on the cars like gradually tapers off. Like, yeah, they'll have a scene or two where it's like, oh, here's some more street racing, but they cut it right when the racing's about to start, just cuts and they're on to the rest of the plot. So I don't know. It's dumb fun. It's dumb fun.
Dumb fun, but still enough to where you got to hide him so Tyler wouldn't say.
I didn't know he had done that because let me make this clear. Nathan wouldn't hesitate to jump down my throat over stuff all the time. I mean, it was when I told him that I liked Prince. I mean, he ran over to Darren Quest at Varian High School. Motherfucker likes Prince in front of everybody. I'm like, oh God, you know, it's just you couldn't get away. From, you know, being
and that's not even really like a dig or anything. Like, I don't know why Tyler would be like, I'm so ashamed to like Prince. Like, who would be ashamed?
But this was back then, you know, Nathan, I at that point, I never pictured that he liked Prince. And, you know, it was just one of those things where I felt like being a fan of stuff from the 80s was kind of like looked down, at least in my eyes. Like, you know, being open about being a fan of He-Man, Thundercats, Turtles, and 80s action films, nobody talked about it, you know, other than Matt Hilton, who was. It was my childhood buddy. I didn't really talk that much to Nathan about it. So it just kind of made me feel like if I was open about this stuff, I was going to be laughed at or made fun of. You know, I used to dread wearing my Thundercat shirts and my G.I. Joe shirts to school for fear of, you know, the preppy guys who, you know, who just go at everything with their pop collars and their messy ass hair and they can't keep the damn pants up and listen to whatever trendy rap artist is
Dan Fogelberg and your Zima.
Their hoops, their Zima, their Pac-Man video games. But fortunately no one made fun of me except one day, and we won't talk about that particular day. But it was just you never felt that comfortable, you know, and then eventually, you know, Nathan came around to embracing all this stuff as well. But with Fast and the Furious, I mean because he told me about earlier this year that he, you know, didn't mind them. And of course, we're a lot older now, and I'm like, you know what? You like what you like, dude. I don't care. Have fun, enjoy yourself. You know, I'm sure I've got stuff in my collection that both you guys, you'd be like, well, hell, when I tell you guys I like Frasier and Seinfeld, like, what the hell, man?
You know, a lot of people like that show. I mean,
I know, but a lot of people like Friends, and like, God, I hate Friends. I hate. That show.
I do. Yeah, Friends sucks.
You know, but
as does Sex in the City. Sex in the City sucks.
I remember trying to watch that show because I thought like it has some good like sexual like storylines and stuff. Like, no, this is just girls sitting around bitching and complaining about stuff. Where's the sex? You know, I turned into the show to watch the because I keep hearing all these stories like they all get naked at some point. Like, really? So I get to see, you know, Charlotte and what's her name from Big Trouble in Little China, Kim Cattrall, and Sarah, they're all going to get naked. I'm like, where's the nakedness?
Of course, that's why you gotta watch Red Shoe Diaries instead, man.
I guess so. My mom guessed that on some sort of game show or something like that. Me and my brother still to this day make fun of her for her just yelling at Red Shoes Diaries. But God, man, we really went on a side rant.
Nice. I like it.
But all right. Well, I mean, what are your all's thoughts, you know, as kids, young adults, when you saw Point Break? I mean, Joe, I mean, is it a saving grace to a certain extent when you see it for the first time, given that Ghost had come out the year before?
Yes, you know, because it's an action movie. It's something different. It's a little twist, you know, of course, undercover going in to infiltrate and then, you know, everybody find out who's who. But no, it's at least action. It kept your attention no matter what's going on. And even that one girl with the short hair, I don't know her name in real life.
Lori Petty.
Yeah, because I always had a thing for her. But it was a good, like I said, it was a good movie. I mean, you got bank robbing, you got surfing, you got FBI, you got Gary Busey. Who the fuck didn't like Gary Busey? I loved him in everything, whether he was a bad guy or a good guy. If Gary Busey was in it, I liked it. So, no, I mean, it at least stood up for me, at least for that aspect and enjoying it. Like I said, I didn't revisit it just because of my reasons. But from watching it from the one time and another time, yes, I enjoyed the movie. But I mean, I'm going to probably enjoy hearing what you guys have to say a lot more, because I know you guys have watched it probably a ton more than I did. One quick question, because I can't remember the time frame of when it happened, but this is Gary Busey before he had his accident, correct, in real life?
After. Okay. He did Predator 2 and then Point Break, and Predator 2 was his first film that he had done since the bike accident.
Oh, so this was after this? The movie was after the accident, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, poor guy. I felt so bad, damn it, because... Yeah, damn, I just wish he didn't have that accident, because I felt bad for him. I remember watching him in DC Cab and Silver Bullet, which we'll have to talk. That's one of my favorite roles for him, you know, Uncle Red or whatever.
Yes.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to
Busey almost steals, I mean, every scene. Well, he pretty much does steal every scene that he's in, you know. And what's good is that, you know, Busey's take on Pappas is a schlubby, you know, veteran cop that everybody just dismisses, or not cop, FBI agent. But he's very smart, but extremely funny throughout the film. Like, he's someone that, you know, you can laugh at his remarks, but you know that this guy is smarter than everybody else working for the LA FBI or bank robbery division of the FBI in Los Angeles. And it just makes him that much more likable that his character is dismissed by Harp and other agents that are constantly busting his balls and just thinking we just want the guy to retire. We don't respect him.
I hated that they had to kill him. Yeah, I hated that he got killed. That pissed me off.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. But at least with this film, the deaths that take place in this film, they're sad, but you don't leave the film feeling down in the dumps. It's not like watching Edward Scissorhands. Like, this movie, you know, it's sad when Busey dies. It's sad when Patrick Swayze dies. But you don't walk out feeling like, God, man, I'm like, I got a rain cloud over my head right now. It's a movie that makes you feel great when you're done watching. Because I don't watch movies anymore that leave me in a sad state of mind. Like, that's why I don't watch Edward Scissorhands and stuff like that anymore. Point Break is something that I could watch any time of year and just feel great after. Afterwards, you know,
because Swayze, I mean, like you said, I mean, he died, but he got to have his epic wave, you know, so that's what made it, you know, like, at least satisfying. You know, he got to, I guess, die loving what he's always wanted to do, or have that big epic moment. So I guess that's why it didn't seem, you're right, you know, too sad with that. But I guess I got pissed with Gary Busey getting killed. Oh,
well, it was such a, you know, because you felt like, you know, it just proved that he was right. And with Keanu's help, he's probably like, yes, I found out who they were. We've got them. And to be right there on the brink of arresting these guys, he gets shot in the back by Roach, and you just like, oh my God, man, he's dead. You know, it's just so sad. And but that's the entire cast gives you likable characters. Like, you get behind everything that everybody's doing. I mean, hell, we all like Bodhi in the film. Like, he is the bad guy, but he's such a likable bad guy. Especially when you know, I mean, it's obviously when you. I'm sure for people who've never seen it, when you watch it, it probably doesn't take too much to figure out who the ex-presidents are, which by far is probably the best, like, gimmick for bank robbers. Like, I know other films have done stuff that's kind of maybe throwbacks or nods to the ex-presidents, but I mean, can anybody picture a better group of bank robbers with a better gimmick or a better setup than, I mean, except maybe Michael Mann's, crew and he, you know, in the beginning they're wearing Joe's favorite, a hockey mask, you know, but to dress up like ex-presidents and business suits, you know.
It's even like a quote that's in there. It's like, oh, we screwed you over long enough. What's another 90 seconds? You know?
Yeah.
It works perfectly and still holds up in the fact that, you know, the political, you know, the landscape that we're in now, you know, I could, that's right in there with that. And Bodhi is a character that, like you said, he's the villain, but at the same time too, like, his intentions are,
he's one, not a bad guy, because
you can kind of just honestly get behind his thought process and what he's doing, which, you know, that is an integral part of Johnny Utah, that being sort of just conflicted. He's in this role in the FBI, but as he's starting to become friends, he starts to be like, you know what, yeah, that makes sense too. And that's kind of one of my favorite parts about it, is it's a lot of gray. It's no black and white, you know.
It starts out very black and white, and then you kind of feel like, you know, when you're watching it, well, why is it so hard for Keanu to, you know right from wrong, and why is it so hard for him to follow through with the arrest? And you think about it with the fact that, you know, he's being pushed. He's, you know, by Pappas, like, look, I think they're surfers. Get behind me on this. I need you to infiltrate. You know, so it's something he didn't ask for, you know, to befriend these surfers that happen to be who they're looking for. Now he's really in a position here too. You know, it's something that it's not like he chose, you know, he wants to do right and wrong. Like when you meet the character, he just wants to solve the big case and be a big hero. Like, you know, Pappas says, go along with this. And it's just now he's asking for more than he bargained for by going through with this theory, because it's what, and then it becomes, yeah, a big, big gray story. And that's what makes it so good is that, you know, honestly, had he decided to arrest Bodhi, I would have been behind it, but it's, you still feel good that he let him go. Cause you know, it's God, you like Patrick Swayze's portrayals too damn much to not feel like he doesn't deserve it. But then again, when you think about all the hell that he put Johnny through the film, you know, the chase of the streets, which is the best scene in the film, and then kidnapping his girlfriend and having a guy hold a knife to her throat, video record it, so Johnny has no choice but to help them. Then you do feel like, you know what, it is justifiable that the movie probably shouldn't have ended. I mean, I'm glad it ended that way. It could be argued, as is the point that I'm making, that if Johnny decided to follow through with the arrest and turn him over to the Australian authorities, that it had been justified for doing all the stuff that he had done to him. You know, driving him to the brink where you're going to come along with us on this airplane ride, you're going to watch me and Roach jump out of the airplane, and you're going to let us go and not do anything about it, because otherwise we'll kill your girlfriend. I mean, it's just doing all these dirty things, but at the end of the day, you find yourself still liking Bodhi, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's... a lot of tension building there, especially when, you know, Bodhi realizes that Johnny Utah is a FBI agent, and yet they still hang out again. And you got that whole scene where they're getting ready to skydive, and it's like, no, go ahead and take mine. And it's like, all right, one of these isn't going to open. And that's what because that's what they're building it up to, and everything goes fine. But it builds that, especially, I like the raid on the other gang.
Oh yeah, which played is by awesome the action scene.
Yeah, God. Which got like Anthony Kiedis and Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That, you know, the lawnmower kick. You're already building up, but that lawnmower kicks on. It's adding to it, and then he realizes they got guns in there, and he's trying to radio to the other two. Hey, don't let him go in there. They're loaded, and the guy's like, I can't hear a fucking thing because of the lawnmower. And then it just completely falls apart, and then it turns out that there's actually another agent that's been there. It's been there for 3 months, and they kind of just botched everything. Like,
do you guys recognize Tom Sizemore?
How can you not? And how fitting that he's in a scene where it's like, here's some drugs, because another promising actor that just sort of like fell into that trap of drugs and alcohol abuse.
Who happened to be in Michael Mann's Heat, as I've been referencing Heat so much here too. But it of course features one of Joe's favorite movie villains from Cyborg.
I was just going to, hold on, before you even say that, I was going to say, damn, there's that guy that when they were surrounding him, when he's, you know, cooling off, you know, in that shower thing.
Yeah.
Like, there was that one punk, it looked like Fender. I was like, was it Fender from Cyborg?
Yeah.
So it must have been, since you were just, damn it. Okay. Well, you took my, I guess you answered my question that I didn't ask.
Yeah, no, sure. And that was always a trait for me as a kid, because I you know, had having seen Cyborg or the trailers for it, and then seeing Point Break, you know, and then oh man, you know, it's the bad guy from Cyborg.
Yeah.
You know, it was just such a adding an extra level. And I love this whole kind of rant, I guess, side rant chase where you really, it really feels like they've caught the guys that are behind all this, and Swayze's just kind of there to kind of help them develop into the surfing lifestyle, and you come to find it, no, these guys are up to no good, but they're not the guys we're after. It's just great. It just, and God, the action sequences are so damn good in this. I love in the retrospect in the film that Laurie Petty says that Kathy Bigelow couldn't give two shits about doing all the love scenes and the intimate stuff. She's like, let's just get to the action. And it shows, because man, there is so much detail and tension from, you know, I mean, just with the raid, when you're seeing, you know, Bunker and Warchild and and Flea and the other random blonde-haired guy just dumping guns out. I remember as a kid seeing all the stuff they're wearing, because as a kid I thought anything like heavy metal, like Metallica and stuff, was just like, oh my god, you know, these guys are these guys are really hardcore guys.
Yeah, they like Metallica, they're into the dark arts.
Yeah, I mean, at least as a kid I'm thinking that, and of course I'm like, I work with Matt and Jordan and Waits and they're big Metallica fans, and now I'm just like, it's the most lighthearted of rock metal. But back then in my mind it was just like, it just added to the intensity of who these guys were, that they were dangerous because they, you know, they say, we're just going to fuck you up. And they listen to Metallica, man. Like, these are some scary dudes, man.
They're into Anthrax. We're in for some serious shit.
Yeah. That's the kind of impression I had as a kid.
Now, you know? I want to ask you this. When you see Rosie in the film there at the, like, the campfire scene,
Wayne's World.
Well, for me, I automatically, I'm like, oh, it's Chet from Weird Science TV.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
I thought Wayne's World first.
I think of
the cameraman from Wayne's World.
Yeah, I always think of him from Weird Science.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say real quick, I just always found it weird the names of two people, like, you know, the guy has a girl's name, the girl had a guy's name. It was kind of weird, you know, Tyler and Rosie, and one's a guy, one's a girl. I don't know. I picked up on that. Did that irritate you at all, that one had a guy's name and then the guy had a girl's name? Or just,
yeah, well, especially for you, Tyler, because did that bother you? That's like the love interest has your name?
Yeah, it was kind of like the girl's name is Tyler. Like, that's a guy's name, you know, and of course, as you get older, you learn that, you know, girls have, like, you know, when I remember seeing one of the shows that me and Nathan used to watch when we were kids, my brother and me, there was a guy on the show in one episode named Tracy. Now, I'd only known Tracy to be a girl's name, and I'm like, Tracy, and then, of course, Tracy McGrady comes along at the end, man. I'm like, okay, but Tyler, I still, to this day, I don't think I've ever seen another woman named Tyler other than Tyler Endicott in Point Break. And I just,
what about a guy being named Rosie? I
didn't see Rosie as a girl's name when
oh really?
Yeah, I've never, even though I know Rose, and you got Rose from like Golden Girls and stuff like that, but it just never occurred to me of thinking that Rosie was a girl's name. I just, because when I look at him, I'm just thinking he's like kind of a tough, kind of a biker dude that hangs out with Bodie and the guys, and it just never occurred to me that he had a girl's name. It just didn't. Yeah. Except Tyler, that's the one that stuck with me the most. And unlike Joe, as a kid, I liked her, but she wasn't, you know, cause I liked my women with long hair when I was a kid. Now I look watching like Lori Petty was rocking back then, you know, she was very hot and I'd have given her a role in the Sam multiple times, you know, with her messy hair. Because she looks really good when Johnny shows up at the beach restaurant to talk to her, and she's got her little small top on, her hair's all messy, and she's got makeup on, and she just such a smart ass to him. But boy, she looks so good in that scene. Yeah, you know, she got a hot smile and everything. And this movie's got the only Sheryl Crow song I've ever liked in my life. You know, I can't stand her music, but damn it, man. Point Break soundtrack's got a good soundtrack, and it's got the only Sheryl Crow song that plays during that scene when he's telling her about his past. You could barely hear it, but it struck a nerve with me. I'm like, what is that song? So when I got the soundtrack, I'm like, that's Sheryl Crow? I'm like, I got to make sure no one can see me listening to this. And I'm like, because it's a really good song. Like, someone put together a music video of that song and footage from Point Break on YouTube, and it's a really good, like, homemade music video with good footage, and the song, it's a long song, but god, it's a good song. And then it's got the song by Hollywood Vampires during the sequence where Johnny comes to like go chase down Tyler when she's like, oh, too much testosterone here, and talking about how, you know, Bodie can, you know, smell your adrenaline, you know, from a mile away. It's just a song that plays during the sequence they're talking about the Bell's Beach.
Yeah,
that's is Hollywood Vampires.
Am I saying it right? I know nothing.
They're not
of the soundtrack.
As well known 80s rock band, but they're kind of one of those, you know, 80s kind of big hair rock band. Joe, you're older than us.
you're old. You should know this.
I don't know. I am older, but I don't know that. But
LA Guns. LA Guns. That's not the Hollywood Vampires is the name of the album, I think. LA Guns, that's the name of the band. Damn it, man. God, I just felt like such an idiot.
Well, I got a question because I know you have all the usually behind the scenes stuff. The name of Johnny Utah, is there symbolism behind this? Like why he was called that for the movie? Did they ever have any behind the scenes stuff, Point Break, you know, talking about
the name? Yeah, there's a small retrospect on it that's not as long as I would have preferred, because I mean they get a lot of the cast back except Keanu to talk about the film. Even Patrick Swayze, before he died, God rest his soul, comes back to talk about the film. But yeah, Johnny Utah was just a name that the screenwriter came up with, as I think it's kind of a nod to Johnny Unitas, which, you know, Gary Busey references the film and he's like Johnny Unitas or something. You know, they just thought it was a cool name to kind of get behind. And they said that originally the script was called Johnny Utah and not Point Break, and that it was greenlit, I think, at Columbia Pictures, I think, in the late 80s, like 88, 89, I think. And then they decided to cancel the project. They looked at Johnny Depp to play Johnny Utah, I think, even Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, I don't like Matthew Broderick in anything. I've never liked him. I hate Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I think it's an overrated film. And to picture Matthew Broderick as Johnny Utah, I'm like, no. Johnny Depp, I could get behind. A young Johnny Depp, I think he'd have been pretty cool, but I wouldn't want to see anybody else play it other than Keanu. And I've had like a back and forth with Keanu over my life, because I didn't mind him as a kid with the Bill and Ted films, and in Parenthood, where he plays the goofy boyfriend that's in and out of Martha Plimpton's life. That's a great film. And then this. And then when he did Speed, I was like, Joe, even though Speed was an action film, a giant hit, all it was linked to was that women liked him. And it just drove me nuts that he's just seen as this, oh my God, oh, I'm so like wet and moist as a snack cake over Keanu. And I'm like, you know what? Hell with this. I don't like Keanu, with him being this, you know, like infatuation with women kind of thing. It just made him look less macho to me. And that's why I didn't see Speed when it came out, because of all the heartthrob stuff going on around it. Speed is a good film. I saw it much later on. But that soured my you know, appreciation for Keanu for quite a while. Devil's Advocate comes out. Perfect film. Matrix, good. It's a film I could like take or leave, though. But ever since then, I'm like, you know what? I like Keanu. He kicks ass in the John Wick films. I've heard he's a super nice guy. His stunt double, you know, went to Virginia Tech and worked at the gym that I currently go to for a brief period. Who was his stunt double on the John Wick films? Small world. But I like Keanu, and he is. I'd say this Devil's Advocate and the John Wick character, I think, are his finest works. I mean, because he's so likable as Johnny Utah, like a good young cop, likable character.
Didn't like Johnny Mnemonic that much.
See, I didn't. I've only saw parts of that film, and it just didn't keep me interested. It really didn't. Back when he was so popular in the mid 90s, and I remember hearing all the hype around Johnny Mnemonic and renting it, and just kind of lost interest pretty quick. Kind of like that with that and Virtuosity with Russell Crowe and Denzel Washington. Man, who'd have thought we'd bring up these two films on this podcast? But yeah, I don't think I've even seen Johnny Mnemonic all the way through, just because I had lost interest in it when I rented it. Just didn't really care for it that much.
It wasn't that great. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And that's why you were bringing up so many of his movies. I was like, I got to bring up Johnny Mnemonic, because I never hear anybody talk about that damn movie.
I mean, and I think that was a heavily hyped film because he was such a hot commodity back then. And I remember the hype around that film. But, you know, I remember even the VHS tapes had like a cutout around his forehead where you could see the VHS tape inside the box. But it was around his head. It was to kind of, you know, play up the whole mind. I can't even tell you what the hell the movie was about now at this point. You know, it was such a forgotten film for me. That's the first time I've heard anybody bring that up in probably about 20 years, Joe.
Isn't that something? Yeah. I bet you everybody that's listening to damn podcast, first time they heard it either, because nobody remembers the damn movie.
I've never seen it. I need to watch it. I think going back and watching it now, I would probably appreciate it a lot.
It may not be that bad, you know, but back then my attention span, you know, it clicked with some things. Like I could watch Heat when I was in fifth grade, but you know, something like Johnny Mnemonic or Virtuosity. And I'm like, nah, these movies just aren't holding my attention here. You know, it just, you would think something that was a little less, you know, not as in depth would have been a lot more easier for me to watch as a kid. Where something like Heat, it's a, you know, it's a 3-hour film, but I fell in love with that as a kid. But it took me a while to get over my stigma of Keanu, like much like how Joe had that with Patrick Swayze, you know. But it's a legendary film. I mean, it's got the music in the film is very, very good. And everyone has a moment to really shine. I mean, like, it's great when Keanu is forced to make the last bank robbery and, you know, seeing on camera with no mask on and stuff like that. And you feel bad for him, but then he's going along with it and threatening to blow a guy's kneecaps off because the guy's sitting there shivering in fear. Like, oh my God, like, Johnny's going to the dark side, man. And for Swayze to come over and say, hey, you know, isn't it bitching? You know, it's like, let's just get the damn money, get out of here. And just how everything just falls apart. Johnny gets arrested, and then Pappas comes in and just knocks the hell out of Harp. God, it was such an uplifting moment to see him knock him out in front of everybody. And by that point, had Pappas not died, you're not even worried about the repercussions of that.
He's because a kid, everyone, he's getting fired or not.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if Johnny's getting arrested. You almost kind of feel like, what would have happened? Like, if, you know, because Pappas comes in, you know, I'm taking out the handcuffs. They're going to go through it. We're going to try and make the arrest here. What do you guys think would have happened had they made the arrest? You know, that Johnny's looked upon as an accessory to murder and robbery. And then Pappas comes in, lets him out of the handcuffs. Would these guys have gone up the river and been arrested themselves? For even though they capture, you know, do you think it, what do you guys think would have happened? Just in a hypothetical manner.
I think Harp would have went through with it and arrested him and everything. I don't think that they would have just gotten off with, oh, hey, you got him. But I think Harp would have been like, no, we're still going to hold you as an accessory to this and you for letting him go. Yeah, I think he would have taken him down.
Joe?
Oh, shit. Well, yeah, let's say after he rode that wave, he survived the wave, and yeah, I guess they went back, and let's say he did decide to, I guess, arrest him. I mean, that would be a weird twist if, I guess, maybe they both, like you said, even Johnny, you know, Utah, if he got, you know, like you said, as an accessory or, you know, having stuff happen, if he would have got arrested too. I don't know. You'd like to think he was got off the hook. I know he got caught up in the whole moment and scene and the new life and what he was doing, his little undercover thing, but... You know, you sometimes want to think, yeah, hopefully the good guy's still, hey, maybe they just let him off. But, of course, yeah, you're definitely going to have to take Swayze in. But, yeah, it's weird. You never envision, like, you know, we assume he died in the wave. But, like, you know, if it was, you know, but let's say, yeah, he rode that wave and then got handcuffed. And, you know, that wouldn't have made it fun. I think that the way they ended it was perfect. But, you know, even the hypothetical, it's like, God, it's like, I think it would have been anticlimactic, like, to even thought of, oh, he got arrested. It's like, you would have been, I don't know, I think I would have been left kind of like, what the fuck just happened?
No, you know? I agree with you on that. It's fun for me to think about, but I mean, every time I've watched it, ever since I was a kid when I first saw it, I was glad that he uncuffs him and allows him to get, you know, Bell's Beach when it broke, the 50-year storm, allows him to catch one wave before he takes him, but Keanu knows he's not coming back when I think in his mind before he lets him go, he realized, you know what? I can't have this on my conscience. You know, I'll let him do this. At least in Swayze's mind, he probably knows he's probably not going to make it either.
Yeah.
But it's kind of one of those things, I think, for their own benefit. You know, he says, let me get one wave before you take me. Just, you know, you almost feel like they're trying to let each other know, look, we bent to hell and back. We've done some things to each other that we're both not proud of. If you let me get this wave, I'll let you take me in. And you just kind of feel like they both know Bodie's not coming back. But for their own benefit before they part ways, you know, it's when Keanu gives them that Vaya con Dios, you know, and just, and he says he's not coming back and then gives up being an FBI agent right there. Like, doesn't even, you're not even sure if even Keanu even sees the death. Like, you know, he sees and goes out, sees the massive waves as they're going.
And by that point, he's kind of already turned around and started walking.
Yeah. You know, and it's sad, but yeah, you're like Joe, you really felt like you would have been left with an anticlimactic ending. if they hadn't got to that point. Like, you feel like that's why the film and the script is so perfect, that it ended the way that it did. It's interesting to think about, but yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to have seen him actually make the arrest and take in Roach and Nathaniel. And of course, Grommond got killed in the bank robbery, the last one, which was sad too, because then you feel bad for him and for Bodhi, because they've been doing it for so long. They've never shot anybody. They've never hurt anybody. And none of them have ever gotten hurt, at least you're led to believe, that they've been doing bank robbery for so long. On the clock. They don't miss a beat. Nobody gets hurt. And here it is, this last one before they leave town. And one of their guys gets killed right there on the spot in a bloody mess. You know, they get shot at for the first time. It just, everything goes to hell in that one. It almost kind of makes you feel like, you know, if Johnny hadn't been there, it probably still would have happened anyway, that an off-duty cop and the security guard would have opened fire. Like, it almost feels like Johnny had nothing to do with what happened. He's just there in this misfortunate accident that takes place. You know, that these guys rode this long way. At some point, it's going to come back and bite him in the ass. I think it still would have went down the way that it did if Johnny still hadn't been there.
Eventually, I think it would, maybe not in that instance, but eventually I think it would have caught up with them. I mean, the main reason that Bodhi decided to go for the vault anyway, I think, is because Johnny was there, you know, like.
Because they never went
for the vault before, right? Go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
Because you're right. They never did the vault before, correct? In any of the riders.
No, and that's something that Busey says in the beginning, like, because Johnny asked him, you know, they never go to the vault. No, they just stick strictly to the cash register because it's quick, in and out, empty them all out, and then go, because they never get greedy. See, I always took it as that, and Nathan made an interesting point, because it's left ambiguous. It's just kind of at spur of the moment, you know, we're going for the vault. I almost thought that, you know what, they've been getting away with this for so long, let's up the stakes of the game. Because now that he's aware that we've befriended an FBI agent who's onto our trail, he realizes that, you know, how long we've been doing this, it's gotten harder for us now, so let's mix it up a little bit. Let's see if we can tackle the vault as part of what we do now. But I also agree, it might have had a lot to do with Johnny being there on the scene.
I think that it's... Now the stakes are too high. He knows that the end game of this, he knows that they're probably going to get caught. So he's trying to up it to, I just, like he said, right? What is the whole speech that he gives? Like, people, when they're afraid, they panic.
Yeah.
I feel like that's that instance. He finally kind of had that moment of, like, kind of being afraid. He knows that the gig is up, so he's just panicking. Here, we're going to do this. I don't know.
And I guess he probably felt it too, because you almost feel like when you start looking at it, God, as I'm thinking about this with you guys, I almost feel like I'm thinking of it in manners like when you watch The Thing or Alien, and you just start looking at stuff that's not there, but it's kind of left open-ended. You know, that the whole idea of picking Johnny up when he says, look, don't panic, guys. I knew exactly what to do with him. So earlier the next day, they show up all staring at Johnny like they could all open fire on him right there on the spot and just leave town. Let's befriend him and take him on what we do every end of the summer on our big, you know, speed star parachute drop. And Keanu is having the time of his life, having a great time. You almost feel like these guys are making a big connection with him. And then when it's all over, all right, we're friends now, but this is what we need from you. And it's just like, God, man, it's, where the hell am I going with this? I've had that Naked Gun moment where I'm like, where's the point I was trying to make with that?
I think you're gonna have to get that soundbite ready. Yeah, just go ahead.
Just that they're doing this to, as Bodhi says, like, they kidnapped Tyler as an insurance policy, but let's include him in something that we do every year, earn his trust, even though it's unspoken that they know who the other one is. And I love how when Bodhi shows up, he's just playing it up as if like, hey buddy, we're gonna go, you know, and you need socks and you need this, you need that, and come on, time is short. And there's a deleted sequence where, and it's in the trailer too, where they're in the car driving at night, and the rest of the guys are in the back, and it's in the trailer. He says, it's going to be a wonderful day, Johnny. As like Johnny holds a gun out the window and fires it, which kind of makes you wonder. And it's on the deleted scene stuff too, but I would like to see more of what that sequence was about. but just that believing that if we include him in on this, you know what, he'll back off. But knowing that they don't give him a chance to back off when we say, look, we got your girlfriend. You're going to help us get out of town with this last bank heist, and then we'll turn her over. What, you almost led to believe that, you know what, they may not even turn her over. You know, like if Johnny hadn't jumped out of the airplane, do you think they wouldn't have killed Tyler? Because if Roach had gotten – Roach, of course, would have died anyway because he was bleeding to death. But if Bodie gets down to the ground, meets Rosie, they've got Tyler. Johnny's still in the airplane.
No, right? I think they would have killed her. I feel like the only reason that he spared her is, you know, Johnny jumped out of the fucking plane without anything, called up to him. It was like, I'm going to shoot you. And he's like, well, what are you going to do with the other hand? You need to pull the cord. No, you pull the cord, and they do that. And at that moment, Bodie's just like – when they hit the ground, he's like, you're fucking crazy.
He's like, you're one radical son of a bitch.
Yeah. So I think he would have killed her. I really do. Had Johnny stayed on the plane, she probably would have died.
Even though I could almost debate that one, because when he says, you know, look, I can't hold a knife to Tyler's throat because we were a couple. That's why he needs Rosie to do it. And he says that I can't stop Rosie. And I almost felt like as a kid, like he was just bullshitting Johnny. Like he was really just trying to play up, like, I have no control over this. And I'm thinking, the hell you don't, man. You can call it off right now. You know, because I think Johnny would have just turned and walked away. He's like, you let her go, I'll walk away. You know, but that doesn't go down that route. You know, of course, can't really do that at the airport when it's a little later on, when he's got Pappas there just trying to say whatever, you know, to kind of ease their guard so that way they can try and make the arrest. But I almost felt like he would have argued with Rosie once he got down to the Jeep. Like, no, we can't kill her, dude. I'm not killing her. Let her go. You know, Rosie, I think, probably would have wanted to kill her. But I think Bodie would have argued to, like, let her go. We got to let her go. I'm going to honor my word to this guy. You know, because you still felt like even to the end, these guys still had a mutual respect for each other, a deep respect that – I think just based on that alone, regardless of all the shit, you know, a shit storm that happened before, you know, he finally made the clean getaway to Mexico. Let's let Tyler go and honor what what I said to Johnny.
And that's the beautiful thing about this film is if you're watching it for the first time, you don't know what direction it's going to go.
It's an unpredictable film. I don't care. You know, it's one of those films that you could show somebody's never seen it. They're not going to be able to predict what the hell happens in this film. As old as the film is, it doesn't have the cliches of an action film that you could predict. That's what makes it such a memorable film, like that and Predator, and so many other Die Hard. You know, it's an unpredictable. You can think all you want, but you're not anything can happen in this film. And I've never really looked at it as deep as I have prior to talking to you guys. I've just always had fun talking about it and quoting the movie to death. I've never really thought about it as much. This is all spur of the moment. I didn't have any preconceived notions about talking about it in depth with you guys prior to this discussion. This is all spur of the moment as I'm talking about it with you guys.
Well, I want to go back to when we were talking about had Pappas lived, would they have been up the creek and everything? I mean, you got to think about it too, because they don't really tell you anything between the plane incident and he's back with Tyler, and then it basically just cuts to that scene where he's there to arrest Bodie. So I mean, I guess they probably would have, the charges on him probably would have been dropped had they made the arrest anyway, you know?
Yeah, I would think that if they had successfully made the arrest and got Nathaniel Roach and Bodie and brought them in, just the news alone would have shamed the FBI. Like, dude, it's the ultimate undercover. I went to the deepest undercover to where I'm like, I'm forced to be part of the bank robbery, but I've got them. They're here. I'm not letting them go. They're yours. We've turned them over to the FBI. You almost feel like that Harp, as much as he hated Johnny and Pappas, just the idea and thought that they have caught the bank robbers that have been eluding them for so long were caught by the guys he hated the most. And just when you think, oh, I can arrest these guys and get rid of them because I've hated them so much. Like the embarrassment of trying to, you know, arrest the guys that made the arrest, it would have sunk him. I think it would have embarrassed the hell out of it. It would have made him look bad. Just say, they got him, man. Like, you're going to arrest them? Yeah, I just, I think it would have been too much.
I'm kind of glad that they didn't have any more scenes in between there that would That's the perfect part about it. It's unpredictable. You don't know where it's going to go, but they also leave a lot to for you to, as the viewer, to kind of just think of
fill in the gaps.
Well, not only that too, but just to, like with Bodhi at the end, did he die? Did he potentially?
Oh no! I mean, in the script, he's dead. Like that. Yeah. That's how it was written. But there was also a
plan for a sequel in like a couple years that followed. Right? Like they had something written up. Do you think they would have opened up that door of like, oh no, Bodhi lived?
I wouldn't have, but at the end of the film too, I thought Johnny giving up being an FBI agent, I thought it doesn't warrant a sequel. Like it's a movie that I'm like, it's so tied up perfectly. Like to just do another one, like on what grounds? You know, you're going to have him quit being an FBI agent. Let's go, you know, the most sought after bank robber in LA's, during that time, like the most wanted man. And then we're going to let you back in. It just kind of felt like there's no way that it would have made sense unless you just say, oh, well, we've let him back in because he was such a good cap, guys. You know, I wouldn't have wanted to see that. There's some movies I think it's fun to think about what a sequel would have been like. This is not one of those films. This is not a film that I have ever wondered what a sequel would have been like. I think the first time I even heard of the idea of a sequel, even thought of it, was when VH1 did their whole I Love the 90s. And they discussed Point Break, and as a joke, Mo Rocca was talking about, hey, if they did a sequel, and I'm like, a sequel? Like, no, it was a bad joke to begin with, but I just thought there was no way in hell they could have done a sequel. But then again, too, hell, you wouldn't have thought they'd have done a sequel with Terminator and make Terminator 2 when the first Terminator essentially, you know, saves the day and everything. You just don't think you wouldn't think there'd be a sequel with Terminator 2. I was really wrong about that one.
Money talks, man. Money talks.
It does talk, but, you know, and I didn't want them to remake it. They did it, and I'm glad it failed miserably with a bunch of no-name actors that were in it.
And it was basically just a complete rehash.
Yeah, and instead of, you know, they're adrenaline junkies, but they're just doing like, you know, I almost felt like this was a film that should have been made in like the mid-2000s when like the current fad was everything was extreme. Like everything was like from yogurt to clothing to television. Everything had to have the word extreme attached to them. Like, son of a bitch, man. When is this fad of it's extreme, man, extreme rules, extreme skateboarding, extreme this, extreme that. You know, where you see the trailer for this Point Break remake, it's just like all these guys do are like to do all the extreme stuff. You know, whereas the Bodhi's crew, they've done various, you know, stunts and stuff, but the big thing they do is surf, and that's it. You know, that is what they spend their time doing, other than, you know, you see pictures in his house of like rock climbing and stuff. But it's all to kind of add a little extra spice to the backstory of what Bodhi's character is like when surfing is their way of life. That's what those guys do. They travel on the money they steal and go into, you know, various places. At least we're led to believe from what Johnny said, they're traveling on the money, going where the waves are. You know, that's what they spend their life doing, is going to where they can hang out on beaches all the time and spend the money that they steal and make big stuff. Damn it. That's what I hate about wearing the headphones here.
I like the fact that Patrick Swayze was, before this film, was an accomplished skydiver himself. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and to know that he really did jump out of the plane against the wishes of the studio due to insurance reasons, that they got him through all this other stuff. And they're like, all right, we'll let you jump out of this plane against their wishes. And that shot is actually him jumping out of the plane that's used in the film.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know
that. Yeah. No, no, there's no cutaway. That's really him saying adios, amigo, and then falls out. That was him doing that.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
And then you see how they actually did the skydiving sequences, which is this apparatus where they have all the actors on these small cranes with this wind machine, and it holds them up in a circle, and they're shooting it from certain angles to make it look like they're skydiving with all this wind blowing up. And Swayze says, yeah, we took liberties, because when you're falling is that fast in real life, you can't talk. You can't have conversations. It does take a few liberties, but when you realize all that stuff, you forgive all that, because the movie's just it's a masterpiece. But it's kind of interesting to hear, like, even actually, yeah, it's like you can actually have conversations about pulling the chute and, you know, drop the gun. You can't do any of that when you're falling that fast in air.
I wanted to mention this early on. As a kid, and it's years apart because this came out in 91, and the other film I'm going to bring up that you probably never would have thought that would ever get mentioned on this podcast came out like 3 years later. But as a kid, for some reason, I always sort of associated them together. But Wesley Snipes' Drop Zone.
I knew you were going to say that because Gary Busey's in that too.
Yeah. As a kid, it was almost just a double feature in my brain. I don't know if we rented them sort of consecutive weekends or something, but yeah, Drop Zone's always one that I need to watch that one again too. I wonder if that holds up at all.
I could see you making that connection, you know, especially since back, you know, it's with Busey being in it, and it's you know, I mean, we'll have to discuss Wesley Snipes at some point in this podcast, you know, from a particular movie or just his movies in general.
No, think of that, my God. First, like I said, Patrick Swayze pissing me off, and then Wesley Snipes, who I love, and lots of action movies, and then you take both of them and you put them in a movie that pisses off all of us off, is that stupid Tu Wong Fu. I was like, who the hell's seen this movie?
Oh my God. I remember when I saw the trailer for that in theaters, they showed footage of Passenger 57 and Roadhouse. And I was under the impression that these were tough cops and they're going to go undercover as women. And I rented it. My mom rented it for me. I'm thinking like the guys at King Video probably thought this young boy is renting this movie about drag queens. I'm surprised, you know, how the hell did I manage to rent this? Because when I watched it, like, what the hell is this? I'm watching that sequence with the cops trying to fill up Patrick Swayze. He's like, let go of my dick, buddy. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, it was just, where's the cop stuff going to happen?
I think my parents rented that, and I have a very fuzzy memory of that.
Wow. So Tyler, you thought it might have been an undercover cop movie. Me, immediately from the preview, and I knew, I was like, oh, I know what this is. Like you said, it's like they're being drag queens. I was like, I do not want to see my action heroes in this kind of movie. For people that like it, great. For me, I was like, no, I'm never going to watch a Tu Wong Fu to see Wesley Snipes like that. It's like, no, that's not my Wesley Snipes.
I know. I'm proud to say I've never seen it again since. I only remember certain moments because it was burned into my brain. You know, that sequence of that cop grabbing Swayze's dick. I just remember that, like, you know, and the cop, like, apparently dies from that, apparently. from what I can remember, like, Patrick Swayze knocks the hell out of him.
Sounds horrible. I mean, describing Jesus. What the hell is this movie?
You know what? What it needs from now on, just stop saying, I never thought this movie would get brought. This podcast is all about bringing up stuff that probably no one has ever talked. That's what something we take pride in.
So many random movie titles just spit out today.
But I will say, if you hear that, your ears perk up. Like, even if it's a movie you're not a fan of or not proud you watched, the fact that it's a forgotten movie, among movie fans, you don't forget it. You may just not have a reason to talk about it. And I think, you know, people who listen, it's like, God, Tu Wong Fu, I remember that movie. You know, or Drop Zone, or Ghost, or... Hell, we're talking Swayze like Steel Dawn, which or you know, Red Dawn, or Next of Kin, or Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, Excellent Adventure, or Parenthood. I mean, we're bringing up all kinds of movies. Of course, I just threw in a few of those, you know, we hadn't really talked about. But
and then still, when Halloween comes around, when we get into the horror season, Tyler and I, along with maybe Nathan, because I don't know if Nathan's seen it, we're going to talk about Rawhead Rex. We're going to bring that up, too. We're going to have some B-rated fucking movie.
And I will say, I've never seen Rawhead Rex, so for Joe's sake, I will watch Rawhead Rex. And, and you know, see what
about you, Nathan? About. Did you see it?
I've never seen it, but I, you know, I'm game to watching a shitty horror film.
Yeah, for me, see, that's the thing, when we had... The local video store that was around us, that was pretty close, was actually part of a place. It was called Ben's Tropical Fish. And they sold tropical fish, and out of all things, they finally brought in VHS. So we had to go to this place, and it smelled horrible in there.
Yeah, but as it should.
Yeah, as it should, and it did. But it was a cool, fun place to go. And it was when there was nothing big of the new movies that came out. yeah, we just went and whatever was there. There was a lot of these B-rated horror movies and other stuff. So that's why I watched the Toxic Avenger, I don't know how many damn times. But then here came this goofy Rawhead Rex and all this other stuff. So, and also remember, I never rented this, but it shocked me that I never, you know, was a Vanilla Ice fan. Never got into the guy at all. And I remember they showed.
Oh, God. Are you about to tell everyone that you love Cool as Ice?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know the
name. Oh, my God. He didn't stop you.
No. That's what's funny. I don't know the name of this movie. I remember they were showing previews of a movie that Vanilla Ice was going to be at the theater. And I shit you not. This is not exaggerating. It felt like 3 weeks later, I went into Ben's Tropical Fish, and I was like, isn't that the movie that just went to the theaters with Vanilla Ice? I mean, I swear it was that quick. I don't know. Maybe it was me as a kid. I'm, you know, embellishing, but it seemed like this movie they advertised at the theater was on tape that quick. And maybe it was that Ice. What did you say it was called?
Cool as Ice.
Cool as Ice. I mean, does anybody know if it really did leave the theaters that quick?
It was a major flop, I will say. I mean, like a epic. Because I remember seeing the trailers as a kid. Of course, I thought Vanilla Ice was cool. Like, yeah, I'd like to go see that. Of course, it didn't take much for me to like say, I want that. I want to see that. And I still to this day have never seen it. I think the only other place I've seen any mention of it was on RottenCotton.com. They have a T-shirt of the movie poster in a way of like making fun of it. Like they're you can buy the poster art on a T-shirt, on a black T-shirt for like $15.
No,
but they're saying, hey, when I own this piece of shit film on a T-shirt, here you go. You know, like they're doing it as a joke.
I got a magnet of the movie poster that's on my fridge.
No kidding, Jesus.
I've only seen bits of it. I just saw that and I'm like, all right, yeah, I'll get this magnet.
Whatever. What are the odds that we bring that up and then you'd have this magnet out of all goofy things? That's why I thought Ben's was the cool place. I was like, this place is getting stuff ahead of time or what's going on? That's why, like I said, I never rented it, but I remember seeing it because I was shocked. I was like, damn, how did Ben's get this movie?
It's still turns out it's all just bootlegs.
Yeah, I find out it's bootlegs or something.
Ben's been going to the movie theater and just setting up a big tripod. And
oh, man.
A big, massive RCA camcorder in the back. And
exactly. You hear people coughing. You see people walk in front of the screen. I'm like, oh, that's just part of the movie. Didn't realize that was
bootleg. Or everyone getting up and walking out of the movie. And God, man, we're really raising the bar of films that don't get talked about much. I mean, God, we're going Cool as Ice. I mean, it's like we are the Michael Jordan of mentioning just forgotten films. I mean, where does it end on this episode? We've gone from one of the greatest crime movies of all time to Cool as Ice and Rawhead Rex.
Well, what's that? Is it just called Stakeout? Rosie
Estevez and Dreyfus.
Is Rosie O'Donnell's like a dominatrix in that? Right?
That's Exit to Eden.
Ah, there you go.
What was that called?
God, another movies I wouldn't have think to picture.
Wasn't that like a Stakeout film too?
Yeah, where like Dan Aykroyd and her go to this kind of like smut island getaway where they do like everything's like sexually related and they're going on some sort of, you know, I knew very, very little about that movie, but yeah, it's where she's dressed up in a dominatrix outfit, he's wearing like a leather like chaps and a vest and like a porno mustache.
What the hell is that called, did you say?
Exit to Eden.
Never heard of that. I mean, I thought for a second you guys were saying Stakeout or another Stakeout.
No. There's Stakeout and another Stakeout with Emilio Estevez and Richard Dreyfuss, and Rosie O'Donnell is in the sequel, Another Stakeout.
Right.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking, but the dominatrix
Exit to Eden, that's another movie where she's dressed up as a dominatrix.
Yeah. I think I'm just multiple movies are just coming together in my brain now.
But that's the thing is that, you know, I think us as movie fans can, you know, appreciate that you would see these movies in the video store or trailers on TV or on VHS commercials. You know, because you always see commercials for upcoming theatrical and home video releases. So you would see trailers for movies that you didn't even care about. But, you know, I'd see trailers for the Star Trek sequels or trailers for, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Final Friday on Alligator 2, The Mutation. And that trailer would scare the piss out of me.
Same here.
But to watch it now, God, it was such a silly ass trailer. But as a kid, it was, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, Nathan and Tyler, do you miss that? Not only from VHS tapes when you'd rent something and maybe you never knew and it was your first time seeing a preview, or when you go to the theater, because it's, you know, that's like what I tell you. I try to avoid trailers for movies as much as possible because nothing gave me more pleasure than when I would be in the theater And then I'd see that New Line Cinema logo come up, and I was like, oh shit, please, please be another Nightmare on Elm Street. And then you'd hear the music. I was like, yes! And I would scream. I fucking love that. I miss it. But, I mean, do you guys miss those times, you know, when you didn't know?
I have an affinity for New Line Cinema because, because when Mortal Kombat came out, and I just associate that logo heavily with Mortal Kombat. I mean, it was... And I could see why you said it with New Line. I didn't make the connection as a kid because I had avoided the Nightmare films like the plague as a kid. So when I saw Alligator 2 and the New Line Cinema logo pops up and the Final Friday trailer starts, it was just, oh my God, I had to sit through this to get to Alligator 2, the mutation.
And why didn't you fast forward?
I don't know why. It was like one of those things where it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You think you're safe because it's daylight outside. Like, I think I can make it through this. All right. And, you know, and of course, you're just hoping to God when bedtime gets closer and closer, you're going to be able to hold it together. And, of course, I couldn't. And I lost my mind over that Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street Final Friday trailer. And it caused my parents a lot of grief because of sitting through that trailer on a Sunday afternoon. I remember watching it. I'm like, oh, God, what did I do? I'm going to freak out. And my parents had to put me in a straight jacket. And I'm like, no, no, you know. Make my brother sleep next to the door, so I would Freddy would get him. Kids sleep next to the door.
And which movie did you say that was that? What trailer?
It was the Final Friday. Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Oh God!
Yeah.
I was gonna say the worst of them and the least scary. But you're right.
I know. And when I watch it now, I'm like, God, how the hell was I? Because Freddy looks like he's wearing chewing gum on his face.
Yeah, looks like
instead of good burnt makeup, it looked awful. But man, as a kid, when he says every town has an Elm Street, it was I'm just shaking in panic when he's mimicking the Wicked Witch of the West, who still scared the piss out of me as a kid. I'm like, Freddy's the Wicked Witch. Jesus Christ!
Now we're playing with power when he's doing it. It's like, oh,
yeah,
God.
It didn't make me think, oh, it's Freddy doing the power glove. It was,
Joe's just rolling his eyes and Tyler's over there pissing his pants.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
another transition we'll talk about one day is the whole changing from Freddy, how he used to be frightening looking and wet and scary to this rubber faced jokester whatever. Ugh. That'll be a discussion someday.
Oh, man. Man, but we really went down the rabbit hole of obscure films or forgotten films, didn't we?
Exit to Eden, man.
Exit to Eden.
God. Cool as ice.
To Wong Fu.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Next thing you know, we're going to have our pictures put on like the movie poster to Wong Fu.
Don't do that. Oh, God.
What's going to happen now?
Don't do it. If you put us on that damn poster, I might lose it. I'm going to be Wesley Snipes with the red mask, though, and Tyler's going to be Patrick Swayze. And
Nathan's
going to
be John Leguizamo.
Oh, man. John Leguizamo is just the fucking worst. I remember renting The Pest and watched like 15 minutes of it and just turned it off.
I remember wanting to see that when it came out, too, The Pest. I used to watch a show on Fox, House of Buggin', which was like an In Living Color knockoff.
God.
Yeah. I thought, this guy's so funny, man. He's great.
I think it was terrible. Luigi and Super Mario Brothers. I still remember Christmas Eve, like 93. Yeah. We rented that and the Car 54, Where Are You? Like movie adaptation or remake, whatever it was.
Yeah. Jake Juggalo brought that up, believe it or not, before you even mentioned the chat room when we were talking about bad movies. He brought up Super Mario Brothers. Yeah, that's another thing we'll have to do someday is maybe discuss the movies that went from video games to movies, which ones worked and which ones didn't. Because
I would love, because Street Fighter, you know, I've come to terms with it. I like the Street Fighter movie now. I don't pretend to, you know, disregard it or like, or being ashamed to say, you know what, I kind of like it a little bit more than I used to as a young adult, whereas a kid, I absolutely thought it was the greatest thing on earth.
No, that would be a fantastic subject, actually, just the video game movie adaptations, because I watched that new Tomb Raider last night. I Redboxed it. It was okay.
That girl's hot, whoever the hell she is.
Yeah.
I just seen
that. Yeah, she was...
You gotta be kidding me. I Redboxed that 2 days ago, too. I got two movies. I got the Tomb Raider movie and what the fuck? Where the hell was I? What was the other one? Oh, it was The Commuter or something with
Oh, yeah, with Leslie Nielsen. Or not
Liam Neeson.
Leslie Nielsen.
No, yeah. Liam Neeson. And, yeah, that
it
was
probably would have been better with Leslie Nielsen as The Commuter.
Yeah, it was okay, but I didn't like it.
It's just another Taken film. Hey, it's Liam Neeson. He's a retired guy.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to approach a retired guy.
But that hot girl in Tomb Raider, I enjoyed it. It was a pretty good movie. And
it wasn't bad.
Yeah, and as for John Leguizamo, I think the only thing I enjoyed him in
was
Spawn as the Violator. That's the only thing. He did play a goofy-ass, demented Violator. I was like,
he looked good. The only thing that bothered me is they didn't put the red on the makeup, like the red, the because with the clown in the comic books, other than that he was missing certain parts of the makeup. You know, say what you will about the film. Yes, it's a crummy film, but at least visually, you know, Michael Jai White's Spawn outfit looked like the comic book, spitting image wise. It looked wet, like it was in the dank sewers and stuff. I mean, not sewers, the alleys of Spawn Alley. John Leguizamo in the clown outfit was pretty spot on.
It was pretty good.
Movie, I remember it was a film that my dad was shocked that me and my brother didn't request to go see it again. Because when that movie came out, we were already in a regular habit. If we loved it, we'd go see it multiple times. And me and my brother both just didn't get – I mean, we talked, but I could just kind of tell after the movie we weren't as excited as we thought. We spent that entire summer picking up back issues of Spawn, trying to get reacquaint myself with the character more than I had when he first came out in the early 90s. And it was – we rented a lot on VHS and – just kind of got to where, you know what, the dialogue, the acting, this movie is so damn bad.
Wanda!
And what's bad is Michael Jai White is a good actor. Like, he's he is the second coming of Carl Weathers. I'd love to see Michael Jai White reprise his Spawn, but with have a better director, a better script. And to this credit, the Spawn movie does follow, you know, the comic books. It's just executed so poorly with, because it's PG-13. The dialogue is campy and silly.
Right.
It's just from
You're right.
And maybe that's something I have to discuss on this at some point, because I haven't seen Spawn in probably 20 years.
I saw a few years back, and it's not great, but I can watch it from the standpoint of like, all right, I'm gonna chuckle at this. I'll laugh at this, but we'll see how that remake turns out.
Joe, do you know about that?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I didn't completely hate the original Spawn. And like you said, I'm sure with a better director and writing and casting, everything that possibly could have felt a little bit better. But the thing that annoys me about the upcoming Spawn is I wish it would be Michael Jai White that would reprise the role of Spawn, because he has not only a good fighting ability, but he has the physique, he has the look. And when I look at him at 50 or 51 and Jamie Foxx at 50 or 51, I'm like, I don't want Jamie Foxx. I want Michael Jai White to be back as Spawn. But, you know, I guess Jamie Foxx is the more popular actor, so they got to use him. It's like, man, I just wish they would give Michael another shot, because
I don't see Jamie, even though I know people don't like Amazing Spider-Man 2. I liked Amazing Spider-Man 2. Yes, it's got a lot of problems. You know, and Jamie, I thought, did a good job as Electro, aside from the fact that, you know, his Max at the beginning of the movie is a little too Batman Forever-ish for my liking.
Even though the end result.
But I don't see Jamie Foxx as Spawn. He just has too much of a friendly, and I could be wrong, but, you know, given the movie, another Spawn movie has been in production purgatory for 20 years. I mean, how many times have we all heard Tom McFarlane saying, hey, we got a new movie coming. I'm like, it ain't happening. You know,
I think because he's also directing this one, but I think Jamie Foxx is going to sort of take over a little bit, you know, because Tom McFarlane is not a seasoned director.
No, so he's not.
I feel like Jamie Foxx is going to kind of end up taking the reins.
It's going to annoy me. Nathan, I think you're right. See, the thing that's going to annoy me about the movie itself, like I said, I have nothing against Jamie Foxx. I like a lot of the movies he's done. But as for when it comes to Spawn, there is no way. You could see how active, you know, Michael Jai White is and how physical. He has physicality. He can move. You could see just the ferocity in what he can do. Jamie Foxx, he doesn't have that kind of intensity, and I guarantee anything that's done, it's mostly going to be in CGI special effects for the Spawn character, and anybody that's going to be in the outfit, which would be Jamie Foxx, I doubt he's going to be doing a lot of that movement. But still, to this day, you can see Michael, he can still do that stuff. He's done plenty of movies where he's still been physically active, and I just hate the thought of, oh god, a Spawn movie's going to come and they're going to CGI the hell out of it.
Oh, of course.
Anything with Spawn, I don't know.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I mean, at least with the 97 film, I mean, at that time it was cutting edge special effects, but you still had a lot of practical stuff with the suit that Michael Jai is wearing that looked damn good with that, when the cape is not in action and he's just walking like in the alley when he's having the confrontation later, the green eyes, the outfit looks, you know, wet and demonic looking. I mean, it looks like it jumped right off the page.
Yeah.
You know, and it looks really good. The makeup looked really good. You know, hell, I mean, the clown outfit looked really good. The sets looked really good. It's like they catched what the comic book was. They just executed it so poorly. And with this, yeah, I think we'll see even less practical effects.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I'm sure Jamie will put on some sort of makeup at some point. But yeah, I think it will be overkill with special effects to where they're like, you know, why does everything have to be CGI? Why can't we have, you know? And it makes me wonder, like, are they going to go down the route of using Clown and Jason Wynn, or will they throw in, you know, characters like Redeemer, Angela, Tiffany, Overkill, Chapel, you know, who was one of the guys that killed Al Simmons, which when you see that him in the comic book, you're like, God, why didn't they put him in the Spawn movies?
And how did that work too? I mean, wasn't there some big kind of like lawsuit and like a lot of the characters from the Spawn universe went to Marvel and or some insanity? What was that whole thing?
That story sounds kind of familiar, but Marvel tried to rip off Spawn.
Yeah, that'd have to be a whole nother story. But yeah, we sidetracked. Nathan, how did you want to wrap us up before we finish up this episode? It's been
I was gonna jump back in and be like, well, you know what? Didn't have any CGI and had like just really good practical on-set locations and filming. Point Break,
yes, which well, is another testament.
All those surfing scenes, to think, you know, because GoPros and shit like that didn't exist back in 1990, you know, like what they had to do to get those shots.
They had people really doing it. They all learned how to surf. You know, when they say it in retrospect, you know, we didn't have CGI. I'm like, I know, that's why it's good. That's why we're still talking about this film 30 some years later, you know, because you didn't have all that horse shit at your disposal, which I get it from a business standpoint. You do it because it's cheaper, but cheaper is not always better. And if you're going to do it this way, bring in the best. God, I hate that. I hate CGI so much.
I liked the fact, too, that Edgar Wright really loves this film, and you can kind of see doses of it in some of his movies, and it's even mentioned in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, that's along with referencing He-Man is what really sold me on that film, was all the Point Break appreciation and saying by the power of Grayskull when they see the old, like, bomb or shelter that has all the old weapons in it and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, man. I'll see it just because they reference He-Man. But all the Point Break references were great.
Yeah, he's a director that actually gets it and loves the craft. I wish he would have stayed on with Ant-Man. I would have been really curious to see how that would have turned out with him behind the camera.
Probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Can I show you guys something? Let you know it's real before, you know, I mention it every week. I just want to show that it's live. It's real. Well, it's not alive, but the thing that I have is real.
Check out my giant snake.
Yeah, let me just excuse me while I whip this out.
No.
It's real. See, can you see it?
Holy hell! There is the Jimmy Woods jacket that he won portraying the real life wizard.
Yeah, there it is, man. Cool ass hat for Spider-Man. All this leather webbing for the sleeves, and then this is the front of it. But yeah, that's that jacket I won that I always talk about being in the closet over there. I had to take that out, and I was like, just to show it's real. There's my cheek.
How often did you wear that as a kid, like to the mall to go to the arcade, like to showcase?
Never.
I
took this because, Tyler, I didn't, since it's a special, unique piece just for that contest, all I did was I wore it in front of the mirror one time, and that was it. I've never wore it. I was like, I ain't going to wrinkle this up, this unique, one-of-a-kind item. I don't know the value of that.
I'd have been wearing that jacket so proudly to the mall when I would go to the arcade. Oh, my God. I'd have been thinking I'm going to pick up some chicks at Jolly Time Arcade wearing my Spider-Man leather jacket and being Jax on Mortal Kombat 2. I'm going to get phone numbers. I'm going to get a kiss on the cheek. I'm going to be the coolest man in Christiansburg, Virginia.
And it never happened.
It never happened. Yeah. But in my mind, you know, that's how I would have portrayed myself.
Yeah, for me, it would have been, who's that nerd in that fucking Spider-Man jacket? Like, but this is one of a kind thing. It was something that I won in the contest. Like, who cares? What a dork.
Yeah, and then some college high school kid would have come over, like, put in a quarter, killed me, and took over my game of Mortal Kombat. Story of my life.
There you go.
Can we talk before we wrap it up? Can we talk about that chase sequence where Utah's chasing after?
Oh, the best scene in the movie. I used to rewind it and watch it multiple times on VHS.
Just the process of mapping all that out. All right, we're going to go through all these little corridors. We're going to go through all these houses. And it just more tension building, too, because just when you think he's got him, that old injury pops up and he's like grabbing his knee. And
it looked like he really did break his ankle or hurt his leg. That looked like it hurt when he
That was a good 15-foot drop, probably.
Yeah. Plus, not to mention, as extensive as that chase was, by going into people's houses, which you laugh at the poor lady that throws her laundry in the air, because you're like, it's a funny reaction, but you think these poor ladies that they knocked down one poor lady who's watering her backyard, the one lady's just doing laundry, and then the third lady's vacuuming, who's just like, you know what, you guys ain't coming into my house, and she's smacking Johnny with the vacuum, and then the pit bull's being thrown on Johnny.
When you see a dog get thrown, being thrown.
I hate animal cruelty, but it was just that funny quick edit of Johnny kicking him. You know, it was just this fast edit with his white tennis shoe kicking the pit bull.
I was just shocked he was thrown. I was like, when the hell do you see an animal being thrown?
Yeah. And knowing that Swayze is going to wait long enough holding on to this pit bull that's probably scratched the hell out of him already and then throw him at Johnny and then take off.
Yeah.
You know, man, it's just nuts. I've never been a fan of car chases because I'm not a car enthusiast and I don't get any excitement out of watching car chases unless you got really cool music. I'm all about these on foot chases. And this by far is the greatest chase sequence that I've ever seen in a film. Still to this day, I can't think of, you know, another sequence where you got two guys chasing each other that's as exciting, tense, funny. And then when it's all over, you're like, oh man, they know. Like, you know, it's like, that's why Johnny won't pull the trigger. It's like, it's, they don't know for sure, but it's just that hunch that he knows it's Bodie. And then Bodie realizing, okay, here I am. Are you going to kill me? You going to shoot me? And then does the famous shot of firing into the air. It's incredible.
Perfect film.
Just, you know, if I knew you guys were robbing banks, I wouldn't be able to shoot you guys either. I would be firing into the air and then going home and telling Lori Petty, yeah, I got hit by a car today. You know, I wouldn't tell him I couldn't shoot Nathan. I couldn't shoot Joe. Like, yeah, can you imagine Joe Robin Banks wearing the Joe Amato modulite mask? You know,
he would have to change his mask because people would be like, I know who that guy is. That is Joe Amato.
Right.
And I'd be following Joe to like Patrick's Roadhouse and he goes to Sal Racy, buys some CDs. Then he goes home and boxes up all his customs. See, the season's over. He won't be doing any more customs this year until next summer. You know. And then Joe's sitting around like his counsel at the fireplace with all those other customers. Don't tell me to relax, Joe. He's a fucking, you know, federal agent, you know, or whatever. And then Joe like offers me like free customs and then, you know, then tells me he's kidnapped, you know, Lori Petty.
No, I'm like, you don't want this one. The arm's a little bit broken. And he never does them right half the time. Yeah. Here, you take this one.
This is exactly how it would happen. trying to sell me on free customs, like, you know, oh, this one's set for a net breaker because the head falls off, and you know, oh man, we could totally parody any movie we wanted, just us three podcasters. We could do Commando, you know, where Nathan's like Bennett and I'm Arnold, and Alyssa Milano instead of my daughter, she's my really hot wife, and Nathan and his crew, they kidnap her because I kicked Nathan off the podcast, and then I befriend Joe Amato, who's not a flight attendant like Radon Chong, he's selling customs outside the airport. And then when he won't turn over, like, the secrets of how he makes customs, you know, he's called you fucking whore, you know. And then I befriend Joe and have Joe, look, you got to help me out here. You got to tell him that you'll turn over all your customs tickets. Just bring him over here, and I will do the rest. You can go back to selling customs. He's like, no, I can't. I'm like, just please help me. I'm married to Alyssa Milano. He's like, oh, okay, I'll help you out, man.
Why am I the villain in this scenario?
Because you're going to have a dart gun instead of a tranquilizer. You're going to fire rubber darts at me. And then you'll shoot one in my head. And they're like, boss, why is he like selling a rubber dart? Because, you know, we've been friends since high school. He's humoring me and making it sound like he's been, you know, knocked out with this rubber dart in his head. You know, I get it all thought out here, man. It'd be great.
Hollywood, give us a call. We got all these ideas.
Nathan's going to have like the Freddie Mercury, Vernon Wells mustache. and like the chainmail, you know, sleeveless outfit and everything. It's gonna be great. He'll be wearing like, you know,
I'm gonna have to start hitting the gym.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Joe's just like, what?
Yeah. He's laughing when Joe's doing that kind of where he can't talk because he's laughing underneath the mask. That's always a good sign.
Anyone have final thoughts on Point Break, Joe? Any of it kind of, you want to go watch it again now, don't you?
I definitely have to watch it again. It's been a while. I was just trying to go back from old memories. So as for all the names of the characters, I was like, oh, I know I don't know the names of all these characters. I just remember parts and things that happened. But yeah, it made me want to watch it again because that's why I definitely wanted to hear what you both had to say. And just hearing how excited and passionate you got from it. Yeah,
I'll probably have to post the trailer to you guys because I want you guys to watch the trailer that I saw as a kid and see if it leaves an impression or it makes you want to, like, oh man, I want to watch it. Then I want to go to the beach, you know?
Okay.
Joe, Goonies thoughts, sir.
Oh, yeah. Damn it, man. Yes. Yes. We can't end this without getting Joe's thoughts on Goonies.
Yes.
Goonies has got to be one of the best movies ever. This is a movie that they better never make a remake of. I don't even want a sequel. I don't know what a sequel would be like, what it would... Just don't do a sequel. But no, it's just... It's the perfect movie that... I always liked it when it's raining outside for whatever reason. And I love popping in the Goonies. It's dark, it's raining, but it's a group of buddies.
I get why you liked it, because especially in the beginning when it starts raining on them and they're, yeah.
It's just strange. It's one of those perfect movies, but who doesn't, like, you know, kind of connect to, you know, when you were a kid and just seeing a group of kids and older brothers and older kids that kind of band together and they're trying to do something to save their town. But I mean, they're searching for treasure. Who doesn't like an adventure and solving puzzles to go through things to get through this? The bad guy's coming after them. Every character is likable or memorable. It's like, you know, there's a lot of movies you could watch to where there's that other kid or the one person and you just don't care. It's like, man, no matter how many times I watch this movie, I don't care about that person. But Goonies, everybody is lovable and likable for whatever part they played. You know, it's okay. For example, I don't know if you guys have seen The Great Outdoors, but you know, it's a good movie. I love The Great Outdoors with John Candy.
I've seen the most of it though.
Okay, what about you, Nathan? You ever seen that movie?
Same here. I think I may have watched it all the way through once.
Well, I love it. And like I said, I love that movie. Another cool movie, but there's some kids in there and none of them work for this movie. And yes, I understand it's mostly about John Candy, Dan Aykroyd, you know, their part in the movie and everything, of course. But these kids, and especially they have this relationship with his oldest son, and there's the girl from the town to where they're going for the little vacation, to where he hooks up with her. It is the most forgettable love interest scene I've ever seen in a movie. It's like, I don't care about this. I hate this part completely. Every time they show these two in this movie, it doesn't work. But Goonies, the whole damn movie with every character and from the villains and the Fratellis. Every Fratelli you love. You love watching the brothers fight over the fucking pizza. Oh, yeah, we're going to kill each other over the last slice of pizza. I mean, you love everything in that.
And it's, I love that scene so much.
Yeah,
just hits him in the face with the pizza.
Because, I mean, not to say it's a stereotype of Italians, but I'll let you know there has been fights over food at times with the family here.
Have you ever thrown pizza at your sister, Joe?
No, I have not thrown pizza at all. There's been food thrown, but I've never thrown pizza. But it happens. I just, for whatever reason. So anyways, but every character, and then Sloth, you have this creature that when you first see, it's frightening. Then he turns into this lovable guy. I mean, it's like, how can you go wrong? And who could say they hate the Goonies? I can't picture anybody watching that movie and saying, that movie sucks. And even for people nowadays who've never seen it, I still think it stands the test of time to where if you're somebody that's growing up now, it's like, hey, let's see, try to watch this movie from the 80s. I think you'd still love it. I can't picture anybody saying, it sucked. I mean, there might be those rare few, but Goonies is just a damn enjoyable, lovable movie that I love it every time it comes on TV. I have it on DVD, of course, still old VHS. But anytime it comes on TV, I love it. I always remember getting the big board game that I always tell you guys about but never showed. And I still have that really cool box cover for it. It has this beautiful art with all of them and even has the octopus, which I've said to you before, on TV, some of the channels back in the days.
Yep.
Yeah, that used to show the octopus scene. But on the movie, when you're watching VHS, DVD, whatever, there is no octopus scene. Probably in bonus features now, but as for in the movie, it's not there. So I had some people that got kind of confused when I used to talk about the octopus. They're like, the hell are you talking? What octopus are you talking about? And then I'd say, okay, well, it's, you know, it was on TV. I was like, well, think about the end of the movie when Data's talking about, you know, some of the scariest parts. And then when he talks about octopus, I was like, he mentions it, but, you know, for most people, a lot of people have never seen that octopus scene. But, you know, and it's not super memorable. I mean, yes, he sticks the recorder in the octopus's mouth as it's playing Cyndi Lauper music.
And it starts dancing away. It makes no damn sense. But as a kid, it blew my mind when I saw that on the Disney Channel. Like, oh, my God. You know,
it was cool. You're right. Did it make sense? No. But it was still cool to see. But just a fun-ass movie. Were there parts that, you know, you could just joke about, you know, like, okay, they're playing, you know, they got to play the bones. And it has tons of notes on the back that, you know, are shown as music. But she really, in reality, only has to hit 5 out of these 30 notes. But it's, who cares? It's a damn movie. It just, it's not to be picked apart like that. The part where the father at the end is trying to rip up that signing, that contract, and he barely can rip it, and he throws it in the air. I told Tyler this, and I picked up on it a couple of times. Like, did I just see that? When he throws the ripped up contract in the air with confetti, after he throws it, if you look closely, you'll see a bunch of more confetti shoot up in back of it. So that always made me laugh. And then I always picked up when Mikey called, Brand, his brother, he called him by Josh when they were in the basement of the Fertilities. And I was surprised they let that in where he called him Josh. I was like, they didn't catch that. And I didn't know if you ever knew. I told Tyler about it, but Nathan, did you ever catch that part?
No, I'm always bad at catching things like that most of the time. Yeah, there was a part in Days of Thunder where they called Tom Cruise Tom instead of his character name. And it's weird how that just sort of passes by most people. We don't even think about it.
It's shocking. You think it'd get caught. But no, I mean, those are just fun little things to mention. But otherwise, fantastic movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Just love the damn Goonies.
Awesome. That's what I missed last week.
Yeah, now I feel terrible that Tyler and I just went and talked about it. And
well, Joe told us. He's like,
I did. No, I didn't want to know.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I've worked with Joe long enough. When he says, go ahead and do it without me, I'm like, you know what? He means it. He's not just saying it to be nice. He means like, no, go ahead and do it without me. So
there was no way, with all it being planned, I didn't want you guys saying, oh, no, you're going to skip and go to something else. I wanted you to talk about the Goonies. Yeah.
All right.
I guess that's our
I never know something because it's just like, all right, everyone's no one else has got anything to add. Okay, we just jump right into this.
I praised the hell out of Point Break. I mean, this is my topic, so I'm like, I don't need to say anything else because this is my suggestion to discuss it. So I don't have anything else to say. People who know me know I love this film. You guys know I love this film. I own the original movie poster, man. That should say it right there. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's Tyler's seal of approval. If that poster's hanging anywhere on any of his walls, you know it's something that he loves.
Yep.
But I'll go into my spiel now. If you enjoyed this video and you're new to the channel, make sure you hit that subscribe button and hit that bell so you get the notifications. Check the links down below. Give that Facebook page a like. Email us at beyondretro84@gmail.com and leave a comment down below. Give your thoughts on Point Break, topics you want us to discuss in the future. If you have a random movie that popped into your head during any of this discussion, feel free to let us know.
Well, we're not going to do To Wong Fu. I'm not revisiting that film, so don't even try it.
Well, a little Easter egg in this episode. Next week's episode was mentioned today. We're going to tackle Silver Bullet.
Yeah.
A classic werewolf film from the 80s.
One of the best.
Yeah. I would say maybe the
American Werewolf in London is the best.
Yeah, Joe,
Silver Bullet is my favorite. That's just me, but I just damn do I love
Silver Bullet. Silver Bullet would be in the top three without a doubt. I make no bet, but I'm saying American Werewolf is the pinnacle of werewolf films. Silver Bullet is in the top three. I will give it that because it is a damn good film.
There's other reasons which next week we'll mention, but yeah, there's just a connection I have with that movie, but yeah, we'll wait till next week.
You probably related to Corey Haim's character a lot, didn't you?
No, we'll talk about it next week. It'll
I know it.
Yep, gotta just give them a tiny taste and we'll leave it at that.
All right.
So we'll check all of you out next week.
All right, be back for Silver Bullet next Sunday.